Hello, and welcome to the PSPA podcast. I'm Helen Chapman, PSPA's Communication Manager. Today on the podcast, we will be discussing communication, looking at the different ways you can communicate as your PSP or CBD progresses, and what tools are available to support you and your family. To help delve into this subject, we are joined on the podcast by speech and language therapist Chloe Cripps. Welcome, Chloe.
Hello.
So, to get started on the podcast, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role as a speech and language therapist, please?
So I'm a speech and language therapist on the community neuro rehab team in Buckinghamshire. I've been working on that team for quite a few years, and throughout my career, I've always worked with people with PSP and CBD. I've worked as a volunteer with the PSPA, supporting on their helpline and their befriending services.
Lovely. So you're not too far from us, really, in Buckinghamshire with our head office in Milton Keynes. So that's lovely.
Not at all. And I used to
Yes,
know when your head office was in Toaster, so I've
yeah,
been in
Guy,
both
that was
locations.
a while ago. We've been
Yeah.
in Milton Keynes since I think 2018.
Yep.
A long-standing relationship with the
Yeah.
charity then.
Very much.
So you said you've always supported people living with PSP and CBD. What are the most common ways that you've seen communication change with people living with the condition?
So it's different for different people. I feel that's one thing that is really challenging for people who have a diagnosis of PSP or CBD, is that what it looks like for them is going to be different to what it looks like for other people. And as a speech and language therapist, everybody who comes across my path will have slightly different presentation, different timings of symptoms. But some of the main things that we see, the main changes that people tend to report or experience, are things like a quieter voice, speech can become mumbled, there can be a hoarse quality to people's voice. Some people find their speech becomes very fast in pace. Also, there can be changes in facial expression. So people's face becomes what we call kind of masks, isn't as expressive as it was. Change into ability to maintain eye contact and gestures can be changed as well. All of this impacting on communication. But as well as those kind of more physical symptoms, there's also changes to kind of the thinking related to communication. So people can be quite slow to respond, and they can lose their train of thought, or they can have problems putting their thoughts into words, and that can be a change. And then also for some people, actually, they just become quite withdrawn. There is apathy is definitely a symptom they experience, and that has an impact on how much they communicate and their motivation to communicate. So it's a wide range of different symptoms, but it will be very specific to the individual, kind of what they experience from those kind of more typically described symptoms.
Yeah, I think you've made a really good point there that not all communication is the speech that we might automatically think about. I think like the gestures and the facial expressions also are something to sort of think about as well. So thank you for bringing that up. And I agree, sometimes you hear from people who might be hesitant in attending things like our support groups because they're worried about seeing people who are more further progressed than them and thinking, oh, that's, the path that I'm going to be taking. But it's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, as I said, it's one of the key things that makes PSP and CBD so challenging is the uncertainty around what symptoms will look like for that particular individual.
That sort of segues nicely onto what I was going to ask next. And you've sort of touched on it a bit with the apathy, but when these changes in communication start to develop, what impact can this have on the individual and their families?
Yeah, it can have a huge impact. And again, it's a very individual thing. You have people who are very very chatty and very sociable. Other people who live their life quite quietly. So it will depend on kind of, your personality and your general communication style anyway. But generally, any changes to communication does have a huge impact. It impacts the dynamics of a relationship. I see couples who have been married for, 50, sometimes 60 years, and they've developed a way of communicating with each other. And these changes have a huge impact on that dynamic and how they interact. The other thing is that when your communication changes, when you're not able to put yourself across in the way that you want, it has a huge impact on how you feel about yourself. And your confidence. So that kind of reduced confidence because of these changes can mean that people are talking less and more reluctant to talk. Or if when they're talking, people don't hear or catch them as well, they can sometimes feel ignored. So this doubles down on this kind of feeling of reduced confidence, not necessarily wanting to talk. And we get into really negative cycles of people then kind of withdrawing. And when you don't participate in a conversation as much, all the people in that conversation, they will adapt to that. And sometimes you end up becoming more withdrawn because people aren't involving you as much. And you get into these really negative cycles where your confidence becomes lower and lower and you withdraw more. And those are the kind of negative cycles that we as speech therapists are really keen to try to identify and stop happening and get some positive cycles. So to have these positive interactions and build confidence to keep people communicating. But that is such a common thing to happen that the change to communication has such an impact on how you feel about yourself, and that in turn has an impact on your confidence and how much you are interacting and communicating.
And I guess as well, like as you said initially, with the how speech might change, if it takes longer for you to kind of formulate what your thoughts and actually speak, people might mistakenly interpret that as you've not got an answer. And I know in previous podcasts we've talked about how family members might jump in and speak on your behalf. Or at appointments, healthcare professionals might then speak more to the family member that they're with and not engage with them as much in appointments and things, which I guess, like as you've just said, would again,
These negative cycles, and
yeah.
our conversation is so finely kind of timed, and we often kind of overlap and jump in, and when you've got PSP and CBD, that ability to time your kind of jumping in and time those interactions is affected. And if people don't adjust to that, you find that you become spoken over, or people don't wait, or you become less included in those conversations.
You mentioned that, everyone is a bit different. So is there any common timeline that communication changes might occur?
Again, not really. There's some people and some subtypes of PSP and CBD where actually communication is some of the primary symptoms a person will experience, and it is one of the first and most troubling symptom for them. You have other people who actually are quite a long time post-diagnosis before they experience changes or difficulties with their communication. So it is very individual as to when and how your communication may change. Often initially the changes can be quite subtle, but as your symptoms progress, those changes become more disruptive and have more of an impact. And then you start to notice that people are not doing things they used to do. And one of the first things is people start avoiding using the phone. So if you do find that you're having to repeat yourself a lot, or you're feeling that you're not being as involved in conversation, or you're starting to avoid either using the phone or group conversations, then that's an indicator that, your speech is starting to be affected, your communication is having an impact, and that's the time to kind of seek help and try to be proactive and not get into those negative cycles. But that will happen at different times and different stages for different people. And it will become more apparent depending on your context. So if you are still working and trying to manage a job, subtle communication changes become much more of a problem sooner than if, you're retired and living quite a quiet life and there aren't high demands on your communication. So it's individual in many ways.
So, if people start to notice some changes with their speech, and you said to be proactive, like how would they reach out so that they could get support from a speech and language therapist like yourself?
Yeah, so there's quite a few different ways to reach out and get support, and it can depend on what services and what policies they have in your particular area. And I think most people who are living with PSP or CBD realise that depending on where you are in the country, there can be slightly different setups to services. But always, if you speak to your GP and mention that you're experiencing these communication changes, they will be able to refer to speech and language therapists. Sometimes we get referrals from neurologists. So if you mention concerns to neurologists or your Parkinson's nurse, so really any healthcare professional is able to refer you to speech and language therapy. And there's quite a few services where actually you can contact them directly. And many of the NHS websites now are well set up to have contact details for your local speech and language therapy, adult speech and language therapy service, and you're able to contact them directly. And even if they won't take that direct referral, they'll be able to advise you how to get that support and how to get that referral to them. Like I said, it's something that has developed over the past few years. The NHS websites and trust websites are much better now at having those contact details and for you to be able to reach out to your local speech and language therapy team.
And what support can a speech and language therapist or team provide to people living with PSP and CBD?
So when you come to see a speech and language therapist, the first thing that we do is we kind of do our assessment. And that is a real broad overview of what has changed relating to your communication. So it can be that we look at how the muscles are moving, how the speech is articulated, but also we think about how those thinking changes have impacted on your communication, looking at kind of the dynamics and how you communicate. But the key thing that we want to identify is how have those communication changes impacted your day-to-day life? Because that's when we move on to thinking about, well, what is our goal for our speech therapy intervention? What do you want to get out of speech and language therapy? And that will be very different for different people. What they want to achieve from it. And you work with your speech and language therapist to think about the impact that the communication change is having. Think about what you want to change, what goals you have, and then working out a plan of action. What can we then do? And that plan will be completely different depending on the person. So for some people, it may be very much about their speech and articulation, and we're thinking about exercises and seeing if we can improve either breath support or vocal volume, and we can be quite targeted in that. For other people, and tends to be the most helpful thing, is thinking about kind of strategies, things that you can do to help improve those that communication, whether it is something that the person does, whether it's something that the people that they interact with do. So we talk about communication strategies, and again, they're very individual and they will be very specific to how the symptoms are impacting you and your day-to-day life and what your goals are, what we want to get, what we want to achieve, and then we tailor those strategies for that. And then there's also an area of kind of aids and adaptations. So thinking about communication aids or alternatives to speech, and where and is there any devices or apps, communication aids that can support you? So those are kind of the key areas that we think about. Is there any kind of exercise that can support? Are there strategies that we can put in place? And are there any adaptation or aids that can help? But the key thing is our focus is what is going to help you day to day, in a practical sense.
So how often would someone see a speech and language therapist? And it, would it be for a set period of time to get those goals and strategies in place?
I imagine you could probably guess the answer is it all depends on the individual goals and that individual kind of plan for the person. So there is absolutely no set formula for what speech and language therapy should look like for an individual. It's all about developing that goals. So just because your communication has been quite severely impacted, it doesn't mean that an intensive block of therapy is what you need. And just because you have very mild changes, you may benefit from more intensive therapy. So it's working out on an individual basis. Because we kind of have our goals and we work towards them. For some people, it may be that you'll have some weekly sessions for a few weeks to work towards those goals. And then if things have gone well, that might be all you need for that point in time. We've worked together, you've got your strategies or you've got your exercises, and then kind of you go away and do those and you're able to kind of be independent at that point. And that's kind of that episode of care, that block of speech and language therapy you've had. For other people, things may be quite complex and things may be changing quite quickly. So actually, it's more about having a session, assessment, and advice, and then kind of following that up in kind of a few weeks' time to review and see what's happening. If somebody is experiencing quite rapid change, then it may be that they need to have kind of some reviews with speech and language therapy to make sure that that change is being managed and supported. But like I said, for other people, if the advice is in place and our goals have been met, then it may be that actually there's no more speech and language therapy needed at that point in time. But the key thing is that it's about if there's change or if things that have been put in place aren't working anymore, that's the time to come back to speech and language therapy. For one person with PSP, that they may have kind of things in place and it's working very well for a very long time. For other people, we may put things in place, they're working, but actually there's a change or there's an issue, a bump in the road, and they come back quite quickly to us. So it's being responsive to that change in symptoms and acknowledging when we can kind of support and being able to be proactive in getting involved at those times.
So, if someone has used a speech and language therapy service, they've gone away and put their goals and their strategies in place. But as you say, things change. Once they're kind of in the system and they need to come back, can they get in touch with you directly? Or is it going back to your neurologist or your GP and getting re-referred back in?
So I can talk for my trust, and we take direct referrals. So people can contact the speech and language therapy department and request a referral directly at any point. Different services will have different criteria or different ways to access that service. And I think, as people are aware, waiting times and waiting lists do differ between different services. I think that can cause a lot of anxiety if a speech therapist talks about kind of discharge and end of this episode of care and then come back to us at another time. People worry about being able to access that service again in a timely fashion. And that is a challenge, but speech and language therapy departments work really hard to be able to be responsive. And it is by making sure that we offer the support when it's needed, when it's beneficial, and target that we can be more responsive. But it's a challenge across many NHS services, and different areas will have different protocols in place, different ways of managing those kind of referrals in and out. And it's really good to have honest conversations with your speech and language therapy team about those, and don't worry about asking those questions. Because it's really important to ask, and as kind of speech and language therapists, as workers in the NHS, we need to be confident and honest about what we can offer and what that looks like for the individuals.
So you mentioned earlier about there potentially being exercises or tools that people can use as changes in their communications progress. What sort of exercises and tools could people try?
So it's going to be very individual as to what's going to work for you. And there are a lot of the exercises that we use are based on some of the principles for people, research done on people with Parkinson's. And some of those translate over really well for certain people with PSP and CBD, depending on kind of their subtype and presentation. So some of the Parkinson's type exercises, which really focus on vocal volume and loud exercises, and there are apps that are out there that have been developed. Now, because they have been developed for people with Parkinson's, it is always really good to get advice from a speech and language therapist to see how they apply to you and see if they need to be adapted at all. There are exercises we do, as I say, that look at effort when you speak and vocal volume. There are exercises where we think a lot about breathing and breath support for speech. There's also work that you can do to try to manage pace if you've got fast pace of speech. Again, these are all very individual, and every single person with PSP will have a slightly adjusted kind of exercise program that will be given. So it is really important to involve a speech and language therapist to get that right for you. But one of the biggest tips I give is if you are a person who benefits from exercises to help with your speech, then trying to embed those exercises into your daily routine is key to be able to kind of benefit from them and keep them going for as long as you can. But I mean, there are people where actually those voice exercises don't have a huge impact for them. And so it is thinking about the strategies that work for you, but also are there any kind of aids or adaptations that you can make as well? And I always say, when people ask kind of how to keep their speech as good as possible and tips and things to do, it's really important to recognize that using alternatives to speech, or using adaptations, or using things to help, such as maybe having an amplifier or writing down keywords, those kind of things, it's not taking away from your speech. It's actually enhancing your communication. It's making your communication better and keeping you in these positive cycles where if people know, if they don't understand you, there's a way that you can make yourself understood. They will feel more confident in involving you in conversation. You will feel more confident, and it will be a really helpful thing. So the key thing is, yes, for some people, those exercises are really helpful. Embedding that exercise program into your day-to-day routine is key. For some people, exercises aren't actually the answer, and it's more just about really keeping those communication opportunities open, keeping involved in communication and conversation, because talking is the best way to keep your talking good.
So it is very tailored and individual. And I can imagine that it would be a very worrying time to sort of think ahead about how your communication is going to change. And there'd be a lot of anxiety surrounding that, potentially around the possibility of losing the ability to speak. But I guess from what you're saying is like the other alternatives are as valuable. So it isn't about necessarily trying to keep using your voice and potentially cause other problems if that's not the best thing for you.
Yeah, and I think people will, we always go like speech first, like no matter how difficult it was, you'll always try that first. And it's just knowing that there's those backups to support and help if that is tricky. So, for example, rather than avoid using the phone, have you got ways that you can maybe have a pre-recorded message when a phone call comes in that will say, give me time, I have speech changes because of my PSP or CBD? And then you can then have that conversation with more confidence and keep using the phone. So you can see that how having that little pre-recorded message that you can use is actually keeping you speaking and helping you use the phone. It's not taking away from the speech that you're using.
Video calls, would they be a better option as things, so that, because often having that kind of visual of someone, you can see that they're thinking, so you know something is coming. So is that a good option to kind of move towards as well?
Most definitely. And I often recommend that. And just even simple things like having kind of hands-free rather than having to try to hold a phone at the same time as talking. Video calls are just brilliant to be able to have those conversations more easily and in a more relaxed way. If you are going to do a video call, trying to make sure you've got a good setup so you're not kind of stood up trying to hold it so that you can be comfortable and relaxed when you're chatting. And that's where it's kind of a really good point is that's why as speech therapists we try to have these goals. What's important for you is phone calls a priority and something we can work on, and then you can really tailor that advice, look at how they're using their phone at home, who are they talking to, and could a move to video calls really have a positive impact and achieve that goal that they keep using the phone.
How could family members, either living with or just part of the support networks, help their loved one who's living with PSP and CBD when they're starting to experience communication problems?
The family, and we call them communication partners, all these people that you're talking to, they are absolutely key to supporting communication. Someone living with PSP and CBD, there's only so much they can do to combat the symptoms and the changes that they're experiencing, whereas the people around them are there that can support and adapt. And one of the things that I always talk to people across lots of different areas of speech therapy that I support people, people are concerned, well, how do you communicate? What do I need to do? And I always just say one of the key things is approach any conversation with kindness. And when you approach that conversation with kindness, it is going to be much more successful. So it is things like just taking your time, giving people time to respond, having a relaxed environment, making sure you kind of cut down the background noise, giving your full attention, being face to face. Those kind of things make a successful conversation. And it is an adaptation and it is different to perhaps how you were communicating before, but it's really key. And the other tip that I always give is that if you're communicating with someone who has these changes, whether it's because of PSP, CBD, or something different, ask them what helps. Find out what you can do. Is it that they want you to help if they get stuck, or is it that they need you to step back and take time? And once you've kind of established that and had a conversation about what can I do to help, sometimes it's helpful to have that with a speech therapist because it's easier to kind of pull together ideas, but that really stands you in good stead for kind of moving forward with successful communications.
As speech becomes more troublesome, what ways would you recommend people utilize in order to continue communicating with their network?
So I think there's lots of different things you can do. And as I said, when we're thinking about that, communicating in groups, keeping communicating with other people, again, that's why we have these goals that we work towards with speech therapy, so we can work out, well, who are you communicating with? Where is it breaking down and where can we target? But it is very much about that kind of collaborative work, people understanding better what's changed with communication so that they can adapt, but also the person living with PSP or CBD, knowing how to make the most of their communication and conversation, whether it's about strategies to get good breath support before they start speaking or thinking about their posture when they're communicating, right through to thinking about different kind of aids and adaptations, which we've kind of touched on. But it is things like if your speech has become very quiet, will an amplifier make it easier for people to hear you? And if it does work, the amplifier, and it's easier to hear you and your speech is easier to understand when you're wearing one, it's then thinking about, well, how can you use that in day-to-day life? What situations would it be used in? And often it is other people supporting you, helping you kind of put it on and making sure it's charged and it's in a state where it could be used. Or it may be that actually having a pen and paper near you. So if there are words that aren't very clear, you can write things. We also talk about kind of that when speech does become very tricky, you naturally move to using kind of gestures more, adapting to kind of, I know a lot of people, particularly with PSP, the thumbs up and thumbs down is a really good thing to make communication kind of easier and less effortful. And establishing that early on, and those kind of ways of using gestures, and people adapting so that they, when they ask questions, they're asking them in a way that you're able to respond more easily with that kind of thumbs up and thumbs down. So it's looking at people, how they're naturally adapting and shifting, and then supporting them to do those good things a bit more. And also, people will often come and talk about, well, it works okay. Conversation works okay with this person or in this situation, but in these situations, it's much more difficult. And that's when we're thinking, well, actually, it's not to do with the person with PSP or CBD. It's to do with that situation and how can we get more support or get kind of adaptations in that, in those environments to make it more successful.
I've spoken to some families recently who have created their own kind of communication charts, and one family even talked about how they adapted a children's toy to almost become like a light writer type tool for the family member to use. Have you heard of people doing similar things?
So yes, it's amazing. The amount tech is progressing way quicker than speech therapists can keep up with. So actually having people, family members and different people kind of innovate and come up with different things that can be helpful and work. And I know that's a really good example, kind of using what is a nice big chunky keyboard, kind of designed for a child as a toy, but actually you can type out and write on it and it will speak out for you. And if that works for somebody, then brilliant, you may want to stick with that. Or we may want to then think, well, can we get something which is going to be more appropriate for an adult and have a voice that is going to work for you? So we can kind of take from that and move it forward. But another example that I know someone discussed was there's these big colourful buttons that you press and will say a message,
Yes.
and they've been used. They're really so they've been used in communication to support people with communication for a long time, and they've been very expensive resources. But now they're used more widely, and one way they're used is dog training. So a dog will
Yeah.
tap it to ask to go out, and because of that, they've now become way more available and way cheaper, so much more accessible. And I know somebody who set up kind of six of those in a box with pictures on for somebody to use to speak out messages, and it worked brilliantly. And seeing it put in that context, I was aware of it, but actually seeing how it was used practically was just brilliant. So there isn't a one size fit all fits all. There are kind of formal communication aids and tools that we have access to. But actually, the individual situations and the way technology is, people are always coming up with really amazing solutions and things that work for them in their context.
Yeah, I've seen lots of videos about animals using those big buttons, but it is a great way actually to common phrases that you might need,
Yeah.
like, I need to go to the loo, I would like a cup of tea, I want some fresh air. And then you can just hit the button. It is a
Yeah.
great idea.
Yeah, and we have kind of a formal communication aid which has these kind of big buttons, and it's very robust. And it's for the aid, it's probably around £250. But these buttons individually are maybe £10 each, and so you can kind of create something that's much more accessible and easy to kind of purchase and use. But equally, if something like that's working for you, it's also worth thinking, well, is there a more robust kind of tool that we have that is designed for a person with communication change? And that's where, as speech therapists, we can work and work collaboratively to find the best solution for that
So
person.
some of these aids, are they available via a speech and language therapist?
So that's a very good question. The funding for communication aids from the NHS is quite complex. Different speech and language therapist departments may have access to some funding, some charitable funding, or ways to get communication aids for people. But in general, the NHS do not provide communication aids unless you have a level of complexity of need where you meet a certain criteria. And for some people with PSP and CBD, they may meet that criteria and they're able to access a specialist communication aid service. And through that specialist communication aid service, they can be provided a communication aid. But I would say for the majority of people living with PSP or CBD, it is about working with the speech therapist to identify what communication aids would work for them, and then thinking about, well, how can that be funded? If it's an iPad, a person may already own that iPad. But if it's, say, I talked about this GoTalk, which is about £250, and if that's what suits the person, then we look at funding. And I know the PSPA do have grants that they can give, and there are sometimes local charitable funds or trying to part fund if people can contribute a certain amount. So it is a challenge for us as speech and language therapists, the fact that for most people we see communication aids and devices are not provided or funded via the NHS unless you reach that criteria of very complex and specialist need.
Yeah, you are right that PSPA, we have things called support grants, so
Yeah.
that offers an individual up to £300 each year to utilize for a piece of equipment, an aid, or access a service. We have funded a number of either iPads or tablets to help with people's communication. So it's definitely worth exploring. Another service we also offer is voice banking. So we partner with Speak Unique and more recently 11 Labs. Could you tell us a little bit about voice banking and like who would that work best for?
Yeah. So voice banking, it's really important to know and understand what voice banking is, but also what it isn't. So as a speech and language therapist, if I talk about voice banking, I'm talking about somebody creating a digital version of their voice, which then can be used on a device if they later need to have a device, an iPad or a phone or something to speak out for them. So if you are at a stage where your speech is very difficult for people to understand and you benefit from typing something and having it spoken out, then that's when a banked voice is really useful. And it just means that you have a version of your voice that will be speaking out from these devices. Now, there are some people that say that if I'm speaking through a phone or speaking through an iPad, I don't want it to be my voice. It's not me. And they just select if they're, a male southern something, or if you're up in the Scottish borders, there'll be a female, Scottish accent. You can pick something that is appropriate but wouldn't be your voice. If you've banked your voice, then you'll have a digital version of your voice which can be used. So when the device speaks out, it will sound more like you. Now, a digital version of your voice is just that. It isn't your speech. It is a digitalized version of it. I bank my voice and it definitely sounds much more like me than Siri or Alexa sounds. But it still has that digital kind of quality when it's speaking out. But if I was going to use a communication aid, I think I would find it very helpful and support kind of that sense of identity, which can be lost when your communication changes, to have my speaking out sounding more like me than a more generic voice. So that's what voice banking can do, and it can be extremely important for a person who needs to use alternatives to speech. But for people with PSP or CBD, there is only a very small percentage of people that will go on to need to use a device in that way or be able to use a device in that way. But we don't know who that may or may not be. And that's one of the really challenging things, that when we see somebody who's got a diagnosis, we know that communication will change, but we don't know how it's going to change for that individual. And ultimately, we don't know whether they will use a bank voice in the future or not. But the way that voice banking works is that when you have as little change as possible, so when your speech is as good as possible, that's when you should be doing your voice banking. So we have to kind of preempt it. It's almost like taking out an insurance policy. I don't know whether I will need it, but if I do, then I have it. So when we are thinking about voice banking, we tend to try, we have to be proactive. We have to talk to people about it early on. We're not sure whether it's something that they will need ultimately. But to have the opportunity to use it, if you do need it, you need to bank early. So voice banking is, it should be discussed with everybody when they get a diagnosis, ideally before the speech changes, but for a lot of people, there'll be some speech change and it's trying to get in there early. However, I talked about what it is. It's really important to understand what it isn't. It isn't natural speech. It's not designed to be memories or legacy. So if actually what you're thinking about, what you want is those, that memories of your speech or having something there as a kind of a legacy, then actually it's much better to do some message recording. So is there a favorite poem that you want to read? Is there just a conversation you want to have with someone, so that there's your speech, and your speech is kind of there naturally, how you speak and how you talk. I often really recommend that people do record some of their speech, whether it is just spending 10 minutes talking into your phone about the weather today, or whether it is a bit more formal and you have some conversations, or record some readings of passages that are meaningful to you. That's legacy. That's a legacy of your speech and voice. And if you are able to do that before it changes too much, that can be really important. It's a lot less time consuming than banking your voice. When you bank your voice, you have to kind of record set phrases. When I bank my voice, it took me about 2 hours. For someone with PSP or CBD, it's going to take longer. So it's just a process of reading through. You talked about two different companies there. So Speak Unique is a kind of a traditional voice banking company, where you record your phrases, and then they take those and they then create a digital voice. Now that company can create a digital voice from what was given, just like it did for me. But if speech has changed a bit, they can actually also tweak and repair that digital voice. And if ch speech has changed quite a lot, there is a process called speech design. And that's where they can use kind of recordings and kind of build and design a voice, trying to get it to kind of be more similar to how your speech sounds. So it's a bit more of a complex process. So that's kind of your traditional Speak Unique voice banking, where you tend to do recordings and then they create a digital voice. Now, 11 Labs is quite an, it's new for us to have access to. Such an amazing service. It's an AI-driven company, and all the advances in AI have meant that we have a company that can take small snippets of speech and create really amazing voices from them. So suddenly we've gone to a situation where actually, if you've got some recording of your speech, if you've got speech samples there, they can be used now to create an 11 Labs voice. There's different pros and cons to the different companies and how, what voices are and how they're provided. So it's really important that you can be very independent in banking your voice, but having some advice from a speech therapist can be really helpful to understand the pros and cons of the different companies, and what the use of those voices going forward may look like for you.
Yeah, I think what you said about bearing in mind that it's still a digital version of your voice is really important to bear in mind. I've spoken to a range of people who've banked their voice, and some people are very happy with the outcome, and some people are like, oh, it doesn't quite sound like me. And it's always important to kind of frame it in that it is a digital version of your voice, so it's not necessarily going to sound natural, but it is a good way, as you say, to maintain some of your identity when using these aids to help extend your communication if you are losing your speech. If you are interested in voice banking, you can speak as well to your speech and language therapist, but you can also speak to our helpline, who can advise you about what services we've got available via our partnerships with Speak Unique and 11 Labs. And yeah, we can fund those services for you if it is something that you do want to pursue.
Yeah. And my main takeaway message is having a recording of your speech. Just even, most people have phones now and you've got voice memo app on your phone that tends to be there on your phone pre-installed, and just taking some recordings and having it there. And then that it covers a lot of bases having done that.
So using voice recording apps or having videos, you could yourself kind of record some main sentences that you might want to utilize in the future, similar to how voice banking can work for you, or the text to speak apps. So
And they,
that's good
yeah,
to
they,
know.
so there's a few different things there. So you do have message banking, which is where you've got your digital voice, which will speak out sentences in a slightly digital tone. But then you can also have, if you've got a whole message that's recorded, so I love you, or some people do things for their dog, sit Rover or something, those ones where you need that perfect intonation, you can then take those whole messages and use them in your app. So you get more natural speech for certain phrases and messages. So that's what we call kind of, you've got your voice banking creates a digital voice, you've got a message bank, which are those phrases that you may use, but then also just having some of your natural speech for kind of 10 minutes of natural speech can then be used to feed into something like 11 Labs as well. So there's kind of different things that can be done. And if you've just got a bit of that, like kind of natural speech, or if people, some people now use voice notes a lot or answer phone messages, just kind of making sure that you know if there is something like that out there, knowing where it is, and being able to kind of access it and get hold of it if you do want to use it to help contribute to some voice banking.
Thank you, Chloe. I think it's been a really useful discussion today about the different support that's available for people living with PSP and CBD. There's lots to kind of take in and think about there. And I hope it's really useful for our listeners. As I mentioned before, if you would like to speak to someone about communication and the changes you may experience, please contact our helpline. You could call them on 0300 0110 122 or email helpline@psp.org.uk. You can find out more about our support grants and also the voice banking services we have available on our website, which is psp.org.uk. Thank you.
Thank you very much.